the Supreme Court is not going to be charitable when it comes to the issue of the dream is now given the 6-3 conservative majority. And there is such a close edge or slim edge of the Democrats in the Senate and the House. What do you see as the best road forward for getting some kind of relief for DACA recipients and for others who are undocumented?
I think the best path forward is for us to continue these conversations for folks on both sides of the aisle realize that immigrants have been essential workers prior to the pandemic. We have been essential workers during the pandemic, and we're going to continue to be essential workers because we are the backbone of this economy. The other thing is that it's important for us to call for folks who are not DACA recipients, who are not immigrants, you know, get on the phone and talk to your legislators and tell them that you believe that we need a pathway to citizenship for all people. And at the end of the day, we just want to make sure that we get a bill passed and we get a bill passed, at least a temporary bill that would allow people to get work permits and to be able to be here free of the fear from deportation. And then we can work on a pathway to citizenship in a different side, in a different approach.
Cesar, we just have 30 seconds, but you're also participating in a study of an outreach to Latinx population of Houston around COVID. What are you finding?
We did a groundbreaking study on people's reserve when it comes to the vaccine. Folks can look at it at fieldhouston.org/COVID-19. They can download that study. And what we're hoping is that this can help government officials make better decisions when it comes to outreach to our community, because what we found out is that our community is not just there. Nobody's talking to us. And we need that to happen in order for us to have a stronger and more reliable community.
Cesar Espinosa, we want to thank you so much for being with us, a DACA recipient himself, executive director of the Houston, Texas-based immigrant-led civil rights group, FIEL. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for our video production fellowship and our digital fellowship here in our New York studio. Learn more at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
As obviously to protect myself, but honestly to protect my family. I've had direct discussions after getting the vaccine with members of my own family. And I think in general, there was just kind of overall skepticism, especially in the Black community, but in Black and Brown communities alike. There are historic health inequities. And so there are reasonable concerns from members of those communities. And that's a community that I belong to as well. And that's why I had to inform myself and look at the data myself. The data was very reassuring. And one thing for me as a Black American was seeing how diverse the patient population was in each trial and feeling comfortable with that as well. There is lots of misinformation in the media, and it's hard to combat that. And so I would go with trusted sources, medical professionals, people in your community, people in your family, ask about their experiences and get familiar.
And don't forget, WUSP Stony Brook is your trusted source most of the time. It's Tuesday. It's 6 o'clock. And it's time for Off the Wall. everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Check.
You're Roger. Supposed to do that before the show.
10-4.
Oh, my God.
Come in.
You're there. We can hear you.
Radio USB. Radio yeah. Stony Brook.
Uh-huh. That's what it is.
Do you read?
We read, but we have important news that we have to share with people.
Well, it's a hazy day.
It's a hazy day. That's not the important news. Okay, this doesn't happen often, but it does happen, and we're ready when it does, because we're professionals here at the radio station, and actually, a professional would have a cough button, wouldn't he? Most of the time, we're professionals, and so we can tell you. I don't know how to push the button to make the EAS thing go off, you know, that noise that it does. But just imagine that's what happened now, and that this is an emergency alert because there's a bull on the loose out east, okay? This is not a drill. This is not fake. There is a black bull. Well, I mean, I guess, well, no, its color does matter because you have to see it. It might be a loose cow, but this is a bull. It's totally black, and he's angry. And he's angry because he was on his way to the slaughterhouse. So I'm learning more about the story. It started this morning about 8:20 out in Mastic Shirley area. That's where Lee Zeldin lives, by the way. I'm sorry. But imagine a bull charging into Lee Zeldin's house. Wow. So he's loose. It's a he. It's a bull. So I don't have to say he or she. The animal, in case you're thinking of picking it up and bringing it on in, 1,500 pounds, so don't try that. He escaped from a farm, and if you want the address of the farm, in case you want to lead him back, 136 Barnes Road in Manorville. A lot of red faces there.
Approach with caution.
Yeah. Flank Floridia, that's kind of a cool name. Of Strong Island Animal Rescue. Hey, that's even a cooler name. Strong Island Animal Rescue. Wow. Said at... I'm reading this Newsday story, and they say the time that he said this, as if that really matters. But Frank Floridia of Strong Island Animal Rescue said at 12:15 p.m. that the bull escaped with from a nearby halal slaughterhouse, and that it was believed to be at loose in the woods. A wrangler is on the scene. Wranglers are expensive, and they've had to pay for this wrangler all day, and he's still there because the bull is not coming out. And now it's going to be nighttime soon. You're going to have a wild bull in the woods at night in Mastic. I mean, there's just so many parts of that story that bother me. We're here on horseback with... I've never said this word. Lassos? Lassos? How do you say that word? You're from out west. You must know.
Lasso.
Lasso? Like Lassie. Lasso. Okay. We're here on horseback with Lassos. Feels wrong. You sure that's it?
Well, maybe it's one of those things that doesn't need an S, like the plural.
There's an S right there. There's the S. See it?
Well, maybe they don't know what they're typing. Just keep going with the story. This is interesting.
It is Newsday.
Horseback. That's
okay.
Great.
We're here on horseback with ropes that were swinging in the air and going, Yahoo! Because that's what they did. We're just trying to get him before any...
oh, like several lasso?
Before any accident. Before any kind of damage is done to him or anybody. Wait, why do you care if any damage is done to him? He's going to the slaughterhouse. You can't get more damaging than that. Come on, don't pretend like you care about the bull. I care about the bull. I think the bull should be let go. This bull, he values freedom, okay? And isn't that what this country is all about? And especially on this Independence Day weekend. For us... It's not Independence Day weekend, is it?
It's thereabouts, but yeah.
I never got out of the mood. It was just kind of... well, it's the month of Independence Day, right? Okay? Well, somewhere it's Independence Day, all right? And with that spirit, I think we should honor this bull. Of course, it's kind of hard to tell him that because he's still holed up in the woods.
Shouldn't that be part of the whole game with livestock? Like, if they get out, they get, you know, like, they get a chance. They get to go.
That's how it works in prison, okay? If you get out of prison, you know, you win your freedom. You know, if you do a Cool Hand Luke type of escape there.
Is that right? That's that sounds my, right.
Well, a cop explained it to me once.
Doesn't seem altogether. Well, that's not what we're talking about.
This is America, all right? It's not different than those other countries where people stay in prison.
All right, well, let's get back to this.
We fought
discussion.
For our freedom, and that's what we do every day.
I wonder what set the bull off.
No, but they closed Sunrise Highway. Sunrise Highway.
That's a big road.
That's the highway. It's the only highway out there. I think it's the only highway out there. Is that where Montauk Highway merges into it? You know what? If it's still called Sunrise Highway, I guess it's called Montauk Highway up to Montauk. That makes sense. So
they're always changing these things, you know.
That's one thing they didn't change.
Could be like some virtual map fighting with another virtual map, and nobody knows.
The highway had been shut down in both directions near exit 58 shortly after 10 a.m. Oh, but it eventually was reopened. So if you're driving out there, you still can drive. You just might see a bull.
After the bull found a nice spot in the woods.
Yeah. Social media users in the area shared sightings of the bull and racism and all kinds of other ugly sentiments and expressed hopes for its safety. I find that hard to believe. A group called Long Island Orchestrating for Nature. Another group, Long Island Orchestrating for Nature. That name's even cooler because it spells lion. Yeah. They're also on the case. Competing groups on the case here. They said that someone is there with a tranquilizer gun ready to secure him. Well, we'll see if he's ready for the tranquilizer gun. And if there are any updates on that story, we'll be sure to bring them to you. But for now, wild bull on the loose in the Mastic Shirley area. Be careful.
Absolutely. And if you have seen this bull, notify your neighbors.
There's a picture in the Newsday story of the bull, but is that... That can't be the bull, right? I mean, he didn't pose for a picture before he escaped.
Why wouldn't that be the picture of the bull?
When would they have taken the picture of an escaped bull?
A standers buyer?
Look, he's just standing there calm as can be. No, I think that's a model bull.
That does look like a little bit more youthful bull. Like, was this... I don't know. I mean,
plus, don't bulls have horns?
Yeah, there's no horns on there.
Yeah, this bull doesn't have horns.
Okay, so we can't trust the photo... But if anyone sees the commotion going on, definitely write us, otw@2600.com.
Yeah, do that.
Love to hear what you saw out
and
there.
I apologize to Newsday. I didn't read the first line of the story, which is the best line of the story. Don't have a cow, but a bull is at large in the Mastic Shirley area.
Ha ha.
No, that's how they win the Pulitzers, okay? And I skipped right over it. I'm sorry about that. All bull aside... we have some serious issues, more serious issues, that is, to discuss. And that, of course, involves this damn pandemic that people really seem to be sentimental about because they keep wanting to bring it back. And it's coming back. Everything we were warned about is happening. It's just, we have to stop marveling at how stupid people are and start acting as if they don't exist, because soon they won't. All right. If they're as dumb as they're speaking, they will succumb to this disease at some point. It's sad, but really they're doing it to themselves. We have so many people who have not gotten the vaccine that it is now turning into a health threat again. The Delta variant is hitting us with gusto. The COVID-19 positivity rate here on Long Island has now hit its highest mark since late April. Okay, and if you recall, that's in the early days of the vaccine. So all the work that we've done, you know, it's just being undone by idiocy. And that's the only word to describe people who do not get the vaccine because they don't trust the vaccine. You know, there are certain certainties in the world, and when there's a global pandemic, death and disease are certainties. All right? Side effects of a vaccine are possibilities. They do happen. But you have to weigh the evidence. You have to say, okay, this is better than that. You have to be considerate of your fellow citizens. You have to think of what the intelligent thing to do is, and you have to listen to scientific evidence. not idiots. Idiots in Congress, idiots on the airwaves, idiots wherever you happen to go that don't have the background, don't have expertise, and simply have an agenda. And that is how you lead yourself into doom. That's what's happening.
Most of those cases, those new cases that you referred to, are people who have not been vaccinated in the first place, which itself should tell you that this there are tools. We have a lot of resources, and the more people that are covered, the better. And they're not getting this vaccine in a vacuum. You're not going to just be set adrift without any kind of monitoring, especially if you have that conversation with your physician. There's plenty of apps and tools alongside all of that, and people really are paying attention, of course, to everyone who does maybe have a side effect. So it's, again, that risk-benefit thing, mm-hmm. and here we are. All of those little comments and things that have been thrown around carelessly by people thinking this is my right,
right.
to say things or to share media and post things that aren't factual.
Here's the thing. You know, you're a regular average a citizen, right, who has a minimal expertise in these subjects, as most of us do. I can't really fault you for spreading misinformation. If you believe it, I can fault people who are in positions of responsibility, elected officials primarily, people that we look to, people who we define as leaders, you know, people in the media also that we look to and trust. The funny thing is, and it's not funny at all, most of these people who are spreading lies and fostering mistrust and doubt at exactly the time where that is going to hurt us the most. Most of those people have gotten the vaccine themselves. That is what is so criminal about all of this. You know, Trump got the vaccine. He got it quietly, didn't want to tell anybody about it. But that is typical. That is typical of the people who want to sow discontent for whatever reason. They will take care of themselves, but then they will instill the doubt in you so that you don't take care of yourself because they couldn't care less about you.
Yeah, and it's become this rhetorical tool, and the benefit to them with this using it as a cynical tool to be against something that very well could unify everyone, you know, galvanize a lot of the fight that has been mm-hmm. Over the past year, but seeking this this other path to push back against something that should be nonpartisan, public health interest should be foremost in everyone's intentions here, but that's too difficult. This is easier to just be in opposition and against and sow discord and try to score some kind of base out of this.
Well, you know, I think what happened because of the political discord in our country. People see any issue as a divisive one. And this was a big miscalculation by the folks on the right, because we could have agreed on this. We could have all agreed and found other things to disagree about. There's always something to disagree about. Disagreeing about this was a very, very stupid move. And I think what you're going to see in the months ahead are attempts to backpedal a little bit, so it doesn't seem like they're being as ignorant and destructive as they actually are. In fact, we're already seeing it. The lawmakers from Texas who came to Washington, D.C. to escape having to establish quorum and have that horrible anti-voter right bill passed in Texas, three of them have come down with COVID-19. Now, they've all been vaccinated, but they still came down with it because you can. It's called a breakthrough. Well, it's not a good kind of breakthrough, but a breakthrough case is when you're vaccinated, yet you still get the disease. And again, you won't, in all likelihood, wind up in the hospital. It won't be severe, although there are exceptions to that as well. It's still a dangerous disease. Now, the spin that I'm seeing from some Republicans is that these Texas lawmakers are going around the country spreading COVID-19. I mean, you got to hand it to them, all right? They spend all this time minimizing the disease, mocking people for wearing masks, and convincing people not to get the vaccine. And now something like this happens for people who did the responsible thing and were vaccinated, got the disease anyway, and somehow they're the ones at fault. They're the ones that are spreading the disease, which you now suddenly care about because Democrats have it. Wow. I mean, at some point, we got to say enough. People, you know, we're human beings here. We need to think first about our survival, and the petty bickering can come later. This is stupid. This is really ridiculous. I think you will see more indications of that. I think, wasn't Cindy McCain on TV the other day or today or something saying that it's not Republicans that are spreading misinformation, it's minorities. Minority groups are the ones not getting the vaccines and trying to sort of transfer blame. It's a little late for that. A little late for the evidence is already there. So, highest mark since late April here on Long Island. You know, I went to the dermatologist today. I've been going on this whirlwind tour of doctors.
It's like a crawl, more like, you know?
Yeah, like a pub crawl, yeah. Sort of like that. Well, you know, I just figure everything is... It's good to get everything checked out, and, you know, they all do different things. You know, general practitioner. I was having heart palpitations, so I went to a cardiologist. Turned out those were being... I figured this out myself. They were being caused by the medication I was prescribed for asthma, which I didn't need as much as I was prescribed, so I cut down and they went away. But I got to talk to the doctor there. Then, of course, there was a whole kidney thing with, you know, the procedure I had to go through a month or so ago. And I went to the ear doctor, had my ears cleaned out so I could hear better.
That's important for radio.
I don't like what I'm hearing, though. I want them to put the wax back in. Really,
I don't know if they have a procedure.
Yeah,
for that.
They sort of sounded doubtful.
Seems
about
kind of gross, actually.
I might have to go somewhere else. But and today was the dermatologist. And I think that's it for now. I can't really think of any others. I'm sure I'll come up with something. But I had this. By the way, I didn't have Lyme disease. Yeah, I showed him the picture of my bite from a couple of weeks ago when I had this red mark that just kept growing.
It was bruised.
Yeah, it was big, and it was getting bigger, and I was feeling crappy, you know? I was headache and aches and chills and all that kind of thing.
Was it just a reaction?
It was a spider bite. He took one look at it and said, oh, that's a spider bite. So why can't we have this guy just as an app or something that, you know, you hold up the picture? Because I went to my health insurance doctor who said, yeah, it looks like a tick bite to me. I don't even know what I was talking to. So, yeah, he said it was a spider bite. So I guess I didn't have Lyme disease. So I learned that.
But treatment probably was the same, though.
The treatment helped. Yes, the treatment definitely helped. Within a few days, it was getting better. So I am glad I spoke to the people I did. But I had this amazing conversation with him afterwards about, you know, the crazy times that we're going through. I've had this conversation with virtually every doctor I've seen. And, you know, he said the same thing, that it's just ridiculous how people aren't listening to the facts. You know, and you know, when doctors, people who work in medicine all day long, have devoted their lives to it, say things like this, you listen. They're not part of a conspiracy. They're professionals. They know what they're talking about. And I have not heard a single one say something different. And he said it's just awful how we are sabotaging ourselves. And I told him what I had heard, I think it was yesterday, where over 100,000 vaccines in Georgia had to be destroyed because nobody took them, because they expired. And his reaction to that was, we live in a stupid country. And I couldn't believe it, because that is exactly what I tweeted yesterday. I said, we live in a stupid country after seeing that news. And there is no other conclusion you can come to. Yeah, we are stupid. If we have over 100,000 vaccines that we just let go to waste when the world is clamoring for these things and we're suffering from not having enough, there are other words I could use. But on the radio, stupid definitely applies.
Not opposed to that language. Not nearly harsh enough. But these things get observed. People have long, long memories and elephant ears. We hear about these things. We remember these things. And, you know, when elections roll around, when communities get together to discuss things, and individuals want to change the rules, or fight for something bigger than them that's good for all people and actually in the public interest or serving the public interest where it isn't being served. That's when things slowly, they get chipped away at, and these things can turn around. They can go a different direction.
Well, that's the hope anyway. That's the hope that that people will remember this. I haven't really been that enthused so far, you know, with the ability of people to remember and to affect change and move in a positive direction. They seem to be influenced by sound bites and misinformation. I don't know. Maybe this will be the turning point. So the Delta variant now comprises 69% of new COVID-19 cases. This is in the five boroughs of New York City. The State Department of Health said it's aware of 8,718 breakthrough cases of COVID-19 that have emerged in fully vaccinated individuals. So it's going to reach a point, and you know, we haven't even gotten to the stage where a variant emerges that doesn't care about the vaccine at all, and that affects people who are vaccinated just as much as people who are not vaccinated. Right now, there are breakthrough cases, would seem to be an increasing number of them, that affect people who are vaccinated, but the people who are vaccinated don't have nearly as severe symptoms. That could change, and that will change if the disease remains. And these people who are basically just spending their time, you know, attacking the scientists, attacking the doctors, attacking, you know, the medical community and ridiculous things like this, those people are making this possible. So remember that. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lee Zeldin, all these people that stand in the way of science, that spread misinformation, remember this, please. And voice your opinion. Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene was suspended on Twitter last night for spreading misinformation. Only 12 hours, she's right back at it again, so I don't know what that really accomplished. But you have to do something. You have to step up, and you have to shut these things down. It's not a violation of free speech. You can say whatever you want, but, you know, words have consequences. When you say something that causes death, you got to be responsible for that.
Three of the venues that her and Matt Gaetz were appearing at for their America First rally pulled out. They were in California, but they were in Orange County, like a predominantly Republican area. I read that story this morning. So it's, you know, individuals saying, hey, we thought actual Republicans were going to show up.
Yeah, it's funny, but still, it's hurting us. It's hurting us severely. So, OK, let's look at what's going on overseas. Japan, the Olympics starting on Friday. Or are they? I mean, this is a disaster. I mean, it's been a potential disaster for a while now, but it's turning into a full-fledged Olympian disaster. Absolutely. It's going to be something for the books.
A lot to cover up.
I feel bad, but this was avoidable. Again, if you listened to the science, if you paid attention to the facts about this disease. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, Kyle, and I'd like for you to think hard and answer me. Is it true that Olympic athletes are required to get the vaccine before attending the Olympic Games in Tokyo?
No.
No, they are
not true.
It's not true that they
are to be vaccinated. What, so, do I have to answer in a full sentence? Jeopardy, I have to answer a question?
I confused myself. Okay. So no, just make it a sentence. No, they what?
No, you don't have to be vaccinated.
You don't have to be vaccinated.
You probably have to be tested. That's my guess.
All right. You are correct. You do not have to get the vaccine to be part of the Olympic Games. According to the International Olympic Committee, as well as the Tokyo and Japanese governments, participating athletes and officials will not need to be vaccinated The IOC is encouraging countries that do wish to vaccinate their athletes to lead by example. I mean, come on, what kind of namby-pamby policy is this? For God's sake, make it a firm policy, you know? I mean, at Stony Brook, we made it a policy. We said, if you want to attend Stony Brook in the fall, you damn well better get vaccinated. I think we said it that way, but we said something like that. And that's the intelligent thing to do. So here's from their playbook, the IOC playbook. Please note, while we encourage everyone coming to Tokyo to get vaccinated, if this is possible, in line with the national immunization guidelines of your country, you will not be required to have received a vaccine in order to participate in the games. And guess what's happening right now? The disease is spreading like wildfire in the Olympic Village. Why do you think that is? Olympic gold medal favorite American swimmer Michael Andrew recently made headlines for saying he stands by his decision to not get vaccinated before the Olympics. Well, luckily, the Olympics don't have an IQ test. Because you're a damn moron. He said it's a risk he's willing to take. Is it a risk you're willing to take for everybody else that comes in contact with you? So, that also ties into the problem of Japan, where for whatever reason, only 3.9% of the population has been vaccinated. 3.9%. I figured they'd be way ahead of us. They're so far behind. It's really, really sad. So these games could have been good, you know, if you had everybody vaccinated, not had a crowd, which they don't have now. There's no reason this couldn't have been one of the best games ever. Like Euro. Euro was great. You know, the Tour de France. Great, right? This is a disaster because they didn't follow these simple policies. So the idiocy isn't just here. Although it did come right up to our back door. 150 protesters gathered yesterday at the train station across from Stony Brook University to decry mandated COVID-19 vaccinations for SUNY and CUNY students this fall. Those in attendance held signs such as, "Why are politicians medical experts?" and "My health, my choice." Okay, politicians aren't medical experts. They're politicians. And you certainly are not a medical expert. Medical experts are medical experts. And medical experts are saying you should get vaccinated. What's so hard to understand here? They chanted, "I do not consent." I like how they had to stay on the other side of the train tracks. They had to be at the train station. They couldn't come on campus. That's great. Kate Corrigan, who helped organize Monday's protest and founded Students Against Mandates, known as SAM, said she was contacted by Stony Brook University students who were concerned about taking the COVID-19 vaccine and facing discrimination if they don't. Oh, yeah, please. So you, this random person, just have to be contacted by these concerned students that basically espoused everything that you're making up. Discrimination. I mean, I love how the right wing tries to put themselves in the role of civil rights activists when it suits them. Yeah, we're being discriminated against for being dumbasses. As well you should be. Students Against Mandates is here to support students that choose not to take the COVID-19 vaccine for whatever reason that is, and to ensure that they will be able to continue their education. Well, here's some education for you. Global pandemics kill. Over 600,000 people in our country have died. Over 4 million people in the world have died. How many is it going to take for dumbasses like you to realize this is serious? We want to get back to normal. We were almost there. And literally, a bunch of idiots jumped in the way. And now we're moving in the other direction again. And we're expected to treat you like you deserve respect? Stony Brook University said, as with other immunizations that are required to enroll at Stony Brook, The COVID vaccines are important tools to protect our community's public health and ensure students' optimal learning experience. We maintain the same process as for other required immunizations to consider exceptions for religious or health reasons. That seems totally reasonable, logical, you know, the kind of thing you expect at a university.
Yeah, no one's saying you would not be accommodated for. And this being against mandates, I don't know, this may be a lesson, one of those life lessons. There's mandates in the world, you know, certain mandates you kind of have to get along with or get over in some way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess some power to you for concern, but it's... Real sweet form of exceptionalism, I think, to mm-hmm. be making all kinds of demands as though you're not going to be accommodated for in every way, that the university has gone above and beyond to provide testing and access and updates and information and tracking and virtual this. I mean, there's only so much that you can do before you create an environment of dysfunction, and mm-hmm. we have to agree to certain behaviors. I don't think the train, the very thing blocking this action, I don't think they would be too happy if people were going against their mandates for perhaps distance or mask or don't put your bike on a seat. You know, there's certain behaviors in shared spaces that we've agreed on, and the university's been clear, transport's been clear, and public health officials and the best practice, the best information we have is that this... vaccination is a key way to the sort of freedom you might imagine that you yearn for. This is not exactly the thing, the way to go about doing it. Just as an example, E, I know people that have just now, just recently, mm-hmm. had their appointments and so forth, and are just thrilled, excited. They've been waiting.
Where have they been waiting this long?
Yeah, in other parts of the world.
Okay.
So I'm just reminding people that there's if you didn't participate in it, there are a lot of people that would do so much to mm-hmm. be in a position where they could access it in the way you can now. So that's
certainly true. We are so fortunate here to be able to have the access. And to just throw that away, literally throw that away, while other people in other parts of the world are desperate,
just
because they know that the vaccine is helpful.
Sorry, yeah, just imagining that made me so frustrated, and just that I needed that reminder of how exciting it was because it'd been so long. Most people who are interested, I mean, there were lotteries, there were all kinds of things going on. To get your, you know, and websites. We talked about this for months.
Do you remember having to get all the appointments for people and going through the website? It was a challenge, but...
There were people building apps. We went through this incredible period, and I think people around may forget that, and we should remind others that it would be considerate for society and for people to know the risks, get the advice they need from their medical professionals, but... take the opportunity because it is state of the art. We have incredible access and monitoring abilities, and it is something so many others are missing out on and would not. So by passing that up, you're not helping yourself and others in the way you could be, it's going to take longer for people around the world to get access as a result.
Yeah, let me just play something that I pulled off of YouTube concerning the vaccine and its importance. It's very short. Let's listen to this.
Fact: COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective. Millions of doses have already been given in the United States, and these vaccines have the most intensive safety monitoring in U.S. history. If you have any questions, get answers from a reliable source, cdc.gov.
All right, that's a very simple message and a very important message. Kyle, would you say that's a positive message to give out to people?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, the people of YouTube would not agree, because I saw this got about 300 thumbs up, 2,800 thumbs down. Why? What is negative about that message? But that is what's happening. Apparently, comments are disabled, but thumbs up and thumbs down aren't. And this is what we're seeing. This is what we are seeing. The dialogue being hijacked and distorted to make a positive message like this. To get the vaccine, to listen to the science, listen to the facts, that is seen as a negative thing. You know, the phrase to fight something like the plague doesn't apply anymore, because we're not fighting the plague. We're embracing the plague. All right. We embarked on a fun project over the last week. We are releasing lost audio bits every day. And these are audio bits that range. Most of them are before the year 2000. They range from interviews to unedited pieces to newscasts to forgotten shows. And we're putting them all online one by one. Started last Thursday. It's going to go well into October. Pick a number, Kyle, from say 1 to 6. We'll just dive into 1.
2.
2?
Yeah.
Okay, well, 2, that would be, hang on, okay, it's in the other direction there, that would be an anti-nuclear march that we covered back in the year 1982, and it's going to randomly go to an interview that we did.
Being rooted through all kinds of police barricades, and, you know, it's not as much of an up to, you know, to see people now.
Do you think the police are being nice or nasty or anything? Do you think the people are behaving well?
I think the people are behaving well, and the police are behaving professionally. I wouldn't say that they're being nice or not nice for the most part. You know, some are nice, some are not nice. But for the most part, they're just doing their job in a brusque and efficient manner.
Okay, that's a really interesting one. That goes for about an hour or so. It was an anti-nuclear arms march in March. I'm sorry, not in March. It was a march on June 12th, 1982. And we have all this audio that has never been released or aired. Or if it was, it was only aired once. We have things like that. We have the beginning of WUSB. We have interviews on NPR for the hacking case that started when 2600 started. Yesterday, or today, actually, we posted our election day coverage from 1983, where Steve Englebright was elected for the first time as our county legislator. He's still in politics now. So it's fascinating. You can go to 2600.com and just click on the lost tape slide that shows up on top. Or you'll see a news story that says today's lost audio has been released. And you can listen to it. You can download it. You can do all kinds of fun things, but it's history. It's something that we're very passionate about, and it's just great that we are able to find all of this. And that's pretty much all we have to say about that. Okay, couldn't find the switch. It's time again for the feature that we haven't done in a while, Films of the Year That Was, where Kyle and I take a journey back to a particular year. Starting in 1929, which was the first year we did this, the Academy Awards, the best film, both domestic and international. We are at 2002 now. Boy, we've gone through a lot of years. Which film do you want to start with, the domestic or the international, Kyle?
Domestic.
Domestic, okay. So the domestic film is Chicago.
Yes, this is a American musical, black comedy crime film.
I like that designation. I got to tell you, though, when I saw the picture that came with the film, I was looking forward to a medical procedure more than this. I wasn't in the mood for a musical, certainly not in the year 2002. It just looked kind of cheesy from judging the Blu-ray by its cover.
It's a starring Queen Latifah. Let's be honest.
That was a nice surprise. I didn't know that.
It's the only character that matters, really. Get to that. But it's about two Vaudevillian, it's about two murderesses who find themselves in jail, and it's very much a show tunes, big band style, and various aspects of the story are danced and sung about in as the form would dictate, of course.
I found myself drawn into the story. And maybe it was all the violence, and I like the way they portrayed the violence. I like it because when they reenacted someone being murdered, they used a red scarf for the blood. And the one innocent woman who wound up being executed, when the crime was described, the scarf was clear or white. So there were little things like that. The music was good. It moved along. I forgot that I was watching a musical in the 21st century, and something that I was dreading wasn't so bad.
True. I wasn't as keen on the genre, but it's a good take on it and a tribute in a lot of ways. Quite an ensemble cast-wise. Many familiar names of the time, including Renee Zellweger, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Richard Gere, of course, on and on and on. But the story itself can be a little tricky at first. Uh-huh. Essentially, there's an affair. Someone lies about it and tries to cover it up.
Oh,
and
McNulty's in it from The Wire.
That's true.
McNulty from The Wire is in it at the beginning.
For a short period.
He doesn't sing. But yeah, he's dispensed with quickly.
Yeah, this guy, he plays Fred Casely, who who pretends he can basically get this young aspiring starlet in the biz and in Chicago theater. So
her name is Roxy, right?
That's right, Roxy Hart.
I think the musical should have been called Roxy, not Chicago, because it's not really about Chicago. It's about Roxy. I know it's a play from, you know, it had two revivals and it's been around for a long time. I just, you know, if he asked me, I would have named it Roxy. I just think it was a better name.
I agree. I think they may have been trying to avoid associations with other similar films. I'm thinking of Gypsy, which is a period sort of.
Aren't there a lot of films with the word Chicago in it as well?
I think that is true. It comes off a bit generic in that sense.
Yeah.
So maybe if they combined it, I don't know. There could have been something more that grounded it in Chicago in a lot of ways. I get that the theater and so forth was a big part of it, and of course the jail, Cook County Jail, is a huge backdrop for this.
It's a must see.
It's a couple of outside shots. Yes, I wouldn't.
No trip to Chicago is complete without a visit to the Cook County Jail.
Just, with pay due respect as you walk by.
Okay, so you didn't like it.
No, right? I wasn't too big on it.
But it's because it was what it was, a musical.
She's sent to Murderous Row at Cook County Jail, and Matron Mama Morton, who is played by Queen Latifah, one of my favorite characters in this.
No, she was good.
Excellent.
She was good.
Really fantastic singing parts. But it goes on from there. They essentially work it all out. But for the time, I can't imagine. I don't know if it had that much of a following.
It was based on a true story too, not loosely based, but it was based on a true story.
True.
Some woman in a show killed somebody and they made another show about that.
It did pretty well. Made many, many times what it cost to make. I don't know. There's not much more else you could really add. Costumes were exciting, and again,
kind of surprised that
great
it won.
Music.
Kind of surprised that a musical in 2002 would.
I want to know what the other contenders were to be sure.
Yeah.
But I could see it. I could see it being well done in the style and those segues from acting scenes. You know they're stage sets, but they're workable in a lot of ways as
well. Okay, well, let's go to the international winner.
Yeah, this was a very interesting film.
What was it called?
I'm getting to it. Nirgendo.
Oh, not in the native language. No. In English.
Nowhere in Africa.
Nowhere in Africa. Great. Okay.
This was a German drama film.
It was. It was a Nazi film. Well, not a Nazi film, but a film about the Nazi period.
Well, they're back in.
But
the,
it didn't take place, except for a couple of flashback type scenes, in Germany. It took place in Kenya. And I thought that was something that made it so much more interesting.
It is a story about a German Jewish family escaping in 1938, the ascendance of persecution in Nazi Germany at the time, obviously pre-World War II. And the Redlich family, they basically make their way here to actually be a part of a farm, not like they're purchasing a farm. I think Out of Africa and other stories were about them owning and being plantation owners in some way. This was about them just basically doing anything to just have a home in the context. And of course, there's a little bit of discrimination and
there's a lot of discrimination. I mean, along the way, they're pretty racist themselves. That's to be expected.
These are the Afrikaners, or no?
That's South Africa. This is basically German people going to Kenya and trying to fit in. Give them credit for that, but the girl fits in almost immediately, and I think that says a lot right there. Is that kids can adapt. And you'd think she'd be miserable leaving her home in Germany and going to Kenya. No, she's one with the people, learns the language very quickly. The mother has some issues. She's got some issues to resolve. And, all due credit, she makes progress. She definitely makes progress. The marriage is definitely on some rocky ground. A lot of fights that really didn't seem to make sense in context. I'm aware that there are bad things happening back home. It just didn't seem convincing, the things that they were getting upset about in Kenya, and kind of not paying attention enough to what was going on at home. I think that could have been done better, but the thing that the film really shined with was just showing Kenya, showing the people there, showing how generous and friendly they are.
Yeah, they tried to show a lot of growth with the wife, maybe a little growth in her treatment of people, and her not seeing the irony of that in her sort of bringing her aristocratic presumptions to this new life circumstance for them. But they have a devoted cook who is a recurring character and reminder of what they made there. And Regina is the young girl. I think she was very well cast.
Twice. There were two of them. There was a young one and right. There was an older one.
Both of them were very, very fun characters and just joyful and very positive throughout. Like you said, an example of sort of how young people are able to get on and endure while many adults tend to have a lot more baggage to bring to the table. And of course, on it goes. Her husband, Walter, goes off, joins the army.
Hold on a second. He joins the army on the other side, not as a German. That's why I make sure that's clear.
Yeah, British army.
Yeah, because
I'm sorry.
The British basically take them all into custody, because when war breaks out, you got all these Germans, hanging around in Kenya. That could be an issue. So they put them into a detention camp, and then eventually they're convinced that, okay, you guys are Jews, so you're not going to be fighting for the Germans, so we can work together. And he joins the army and helps them out a bit.
Yep. And comes back, eventually wants to return, and that leaves conflict at the end there.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I had issues with. He goes off to the army. You learn nothing about what happened to him in the army. Just comes, okay, I'm back from the army now. How was your time in the army? Did you even see a battlefield? Did anything happen? We learn nothing about that.
He does recount some things that happened to the in-laws who didn't make it out, and tries to impart how lucky they are in some ways. Right. But I think you're right. Not being native speakers, if we had German language, even a rough overview, we might have heard a lot more in the dialogue than the subtitles. We've said that with movies we've watched in this series before. It's critical. There is so much that can be lost when you're reading something versus knowing what words are used and what all kinds of ways that particular word choice.
One of the things that we might not have seen is that when two characters are speaking to each other, we see subtitles for each one, and we might not have realized, hey, they're speaking different languages and they don't understand each other. But we're seeing, you know, we're seeing the subtitles and not realizing that. Now, if you're watching it in German, and it's native German, you'd know right away, oh, they're speaking Swahili. I mean, you know, yeah, we know the difference between Swahili and German. But when you're reading subtitles, you can sort of not pay attention to that as much and miss that. So that does happen. Also, another time, somebody was speaking English, and I just forgot they were speaking English. And I couldn't figure out why the main character didn't understand what he was saying. So obviously he didn't speak English.
That's very true, because there's a lot of code switching in some of the conversations from Kenyan tongue to German to British or whatever English.
But the woman, the wife, whose name I forgot, she basically evolved over the course of the film, she concluded. She made a conclusion at the end, which I thought.
Jettel.
What's her name?
Jettel.
Jettel. Okay.
J-E-T-T-L.
Okay. Listen to this. Tolerance doesn't mean that everyone is the same. That would be stupid. What I've learned here is how valuable differences are. Differences are good, and intelligent people will never hold it against you. A little preachy, but yeah, that's it. That's the message. And it's, you know, worth 2 hours plus to get that message. So yeah, I like the film. Nowhere in Africa.
Good stuff. Lots of natural environment from that location.
The projector is off until next week or maybe beyond. We'll see.
We'll maybe have more films.
Yeah.
Don't forget to write us, otw@2600.com. And if you would like to listen to this on a voice-activated assistant, you can summon it and say, play the off-the-wall radio show.
Really? That's how it works? Just say...
whatever the wake word is. It could be like, you stupid thing.
Alexa. Okay, she didn't hear me. Play off the wall, or play the latest off the wall? What's the exact phrasing?
The off-the-wall radio show.
Play the off-the-wall radio. Try it out, folks. Try it out. And it remembers. It remembers the last one that you heard. So if you stop it and ask it to do that again, it'll resume at that point. We live in marvelous times. Sad news, this week, or a few days ago, we lost Biz Markie, one of the true icons in the rap world, and one of our own. He graduated Patchogue Medford High School, right down the road.
Someone with like that iconic voice, you know, from so many different tracks that you don't even know you know.
Yes, yes. But here's one you might not know that you knew, or maybe you just don't know it, period. We're going to close out with that and encourage you to keep listening to WUSB and to Finn and to us next week. Have a good night.
So long.
I'm the Bismarck King, I'm known for beatboxing the rap, and now it's time to put Long Island on the map, and letting you know that it'll put you in a trance. Something funny made by me, and it's called the business. I think the way I do it is so unique. By the way, I move my hand, hips, legs, and feet. But if you think that you can master it, you got a fat chance, cause it's very difficult to do. What is it called? The Bismarck, Bismarck. The Bismarck, Bismarck. The Bismarck, Bismarck. The Bismarck, Bismarck, Bismarck. The Bismarck dance, the second to none. I was playing at the moment how it should be done. Kick your legs till your pants almost rip. Shake from side to side with your arms and hips. Why you doing it? If you mess up your hair, then you know party people that you're halfway there. They heard of Bismarcky all the way in France. And it came to Antarctica doing my dance. The Bismarck, Bismarck. The Bismarck, Bismarck. Yeah. The Bismarck, Bismarck. Do my dance. The Bismarck, Bismarck, Bismarck. Come on. The Bismarck, Bismarck. Everybody. The Bismarck, Bismarck. Everybody. The Bismarck, Bismarck. So I want you to do my dance. The Bismarck, Bismarck, Bismarck. Now everybody out there that want to learn the biz dance, come up to the front. All the ladies to one side, and all the homeboys to one side, and I'm going to show you how you should do it. You should throw one leg to one side, and then throw the other leg up to the other side, then throw your leg up and bob your head, and then this the way you do it. One, two, one, two, three, here! Don't be smart. baseball geek. I'm known for beatboxing, I rap. And now it's time to put Long Island on the map. And letting you know that it'll put you in a trance. Something funny made by me, and it's called the Biz Dance. I think the way I do it is so unique. By the way, I move my hand, hips, legs, and feet. But if you think that you can master it, you got a fat chance. Cause it's very difficult to do. What is it called? The Biz Mark, Biz Mark. What is it? What is it? Biz Mark, Biz Mark. What is it? A blizzard? Biz Mark, Biz Mark. Come on, come on. Biz Mark, Biz Mark, Biz Mark. Everybody. Biz Mark, Biz Mark. That's my new dance. Biz Mark, Biz Mark. Yo, check it out. Biz Mark, Biz Mark. Hey, the Biz Mark, Biz Mark. Come on, the Biz Mark, Biz Mark. Come on, the Biz Mark, Biz Mark. Everybody, Biz Mark, Biz Mark. The Biz Mark, Biz Mark, Biz Mark. Now I know Fort Greene could do the Biz Dance, and Queensbridge could do the Biz Dance, and Atlantic Terminals could do the Biz Dance, White Cross and Gowanus could do the Biz Dance, 40 and Basin could do the Biz Dance, and Astoria Project could do the Biz Dance. Everybody on Farmers Boulevard could do the Biz Dance, and I know Bayshore, CI, Amityville, Winans, Brentwood, Corbin, everywhere in Long Island could do the Biz Dance. Hempstead, Freeport, everywhere could do the Biz Dance. Manhattan, get projects in Colonial could do the Biz Dance. Even the Bronx, Co-op City, Bronx River could do the Biz Dance. But they can't do it like me.
Hey kids, you're listening to Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook, and we're going to give away some tickets right off the bat here. We're going to give away some tickets to the Stony Brook Film Festival, which is this week coming up here, the 22nd to the 31st. You can get tickets to every show, socially distant, everything live, you can go. Or you can get virtual tickets. You're going to give me a call right now. I have two pairs of tickets to give away, 631-632-9872. That's 631-632-9872. And now we have a little interview from Mr. Alan Inkles, the director, which we pre-recorded. And we're going to hear what Alan has to tell us about the wonderful Stony Brook Film Festival. Meanwhile, give me a call right now, 631-632-9872. Get yourself a pair of tickets to this week's Stony Brook Film Festival or the virtual one in August. Get the virtual tickets, too. All free to you, baby. 631-632-9872.
It's so great, Alan, to have you on the air again at WUSB Stony Brook on Finn's Revolution. And we did miss each other last year due to some various complications. And you are the director of the Stony Brook Film Festival. And I believe this is the 26th one, right?
26th. That's one last year virtual, so that counts. That counts.
That's right. And it's amazing that the festival is going on. I'm so happy that it is, both physically and virtually, and in person and virtually. And you do it year in, year out, and despite whatever things get thrown in your way or our way. And I'm so happy. I'm so proud of the festival myself for you guys having done such great work.
I appreciate it. And it always signifies the beginning of the summer and the beginning of getting ready for the film festival when we go on your show, Finn. So I always look forward to it.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. So first of all, let's talk a little about how you handled things last year, because things did happen last year with the film.
Yeah, press. It was, the timing. Our last show, we just did a little private event with the Emerson String Quartet, and I had a chance to talk for our president and provost. You know, we have a new president and provost at Stony Brook, depending what you consider new. Anything after COVID, I consider new, and they both came in after COVID. And I talked about on stage that the last event we had was over 15 months ago. It was our gala, which I had to beg the university to let me do because we were just in the throes of, we got to shut down, we got to shut down. And I said, please let me do the gala. And that was Kelly O'Hara and Sutton Foster, two big Broadway musical stars.
Right.
And they let me go forward with it. We canceled the party, which made sense. You know, people weren't gathering around food, so that was fine. But even Kelly O'Hara, during the night, she was saying, I mean, it was an eerie feeling. Most people came. Few people didn't show up. They were just beginning to, this was March 12th. So you think back to those days that we were right about thinking what was going to happen. She even was saying things like, this might be the last time we see each other for a little while, maybe. And boy, how prophetic was she? That was the last concert. The next day, the Met went down. The New York Philharmonic went down. The Knicks went, the NBA went down. And 2 days later, Broadway was closed. And we've been that way since.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll tell you a personal quick little thing. My band, which of course everyone knows.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My band, actually, we played the day before New York City shut down. So there wow. you go. We like to blame it on ourselves.
It's a crazy time. And you know, the reality is, you know, our film series, the film festival, we start looking at films around middle of December. And then we make our choices by May 1. I mean, Kent Marks, who's you may have spoken to Kent in the past.
Yeah,
he's my festival coordinator. He's become a really good co-programmer with me, which really helped because, you know, for the first 20 years, I really programmed this festival with some help, but basically my eyes were on everything. And he's been really great the last 6-7 years, really the last couple of years coming into his own. And we really co-programmed this festival. But by March 15th, we had probably seen about 2,000 films. Mm. And, you know, at that point, we were, you know, we all thought, who knows what we thought, but we all thought, okay, this will come, it'll be a couple months. We're planning on doing a festival. So by middle, you know, it wasn't until around the end of March I canceled the rest of my season, the live season. And then by April, we were saying, okay, then maybe we'll do the festival in October. Maybe we'll do it if it's going to be longer than that. And why don't we do half a festival? Because maybe go the same weekend that Hamptons would go, that Columbus Day weekend, and we'll have a real Long Island festival. So about middle of May, Kent and I decided we were not going to choose 40 to 50 films, but we're going to choose 25 to 30 films, which was really hard, by the way. It's always hard getting, even you know, narrowing down to 50. So we chose 25 to 30 films. And then by the time May, June came around, we realized, you know what, this isn't going away. And we're not going to be able to do this in October. So we got to make a decision. And we decided with our board that we were going to do this all virtual. The greatest thing is, it's a crazy story. About 20 some odd years ago, a filmmaker, this woman, Sheila Andreen, came to my festival with a film called Outpatient. And it won our best film that year. And she told me that year, Alan, I'm starting this new company. You know, they have this thing called Netflix, which just started. I'm going to start this thing called IndieFlix for independent films. I said, okay, great. Good luck to it. She calls me 6 months later and says, I'm doing it. And I want to come and announce it at your festival next year. And I want to give a big prize, a cash prize, to the winning film on stage. She comes for the dinner before. She has dinner with John Anderson, the film critic for Newsday. Mm-hmm. She tells him the whole story. He loves it. He runs a 3-page story in the New York Times as a freelance. Her company's launched. And 20 years later, it's a huge company. And I called her up and said, hey, Sheila, do you do virtual film festivals? She said, I do now. And we created IndieFlix Festivals, which was created solely for Stony Brook. So I had my own platform, protected, DRM protected for security, you know, like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. You know, you can't download it. Of course, there's these geniuses out there that can download anything, we know. But for the most part, you can't download it. And we created a very safe platform. And I went out to my distributors, and we went to our filmmakers, and we said, listen, we're going virtual on our own platform. We're not going to go on anyone else's platform, and you have to go and buy it like a lot of these companies did. A lot of these theater festivals worked with other companies. It was our festival. We created it. You can download an app. We have the IndieFlix Festivals app. You were able to watch it on all devices, and it just really worked.
And that's amazing because you had somebody with a lot of experience there, a lot of knowledge, and you tapped right into it.
Absolutely. And she was so great. I mean, look, there are other companies out there that were beginning to start it. We interviewed a couple. You know, they all wanted percentages, which is fine. But, you know, look, we didn't know enough about it. We had to learn it. And I trusted Sheila. And I'm so glad I trusted her. We've kind of rekindled this friendship that we had 20 years ago because we did, you know, we did the festival and we did a spring film series. And we're, of course, using it again this summer virtually. But they are impeccable. And I was able to show these films, you know, we ran them, you know, for the fall, we ran one film a week with a feature and a short. We ran it over 12 weeks, a full month. We had people that had 4 days to watch these films. They could vote on them, just like the festival. And we sold, Finn, almost 1,000 passes. Now, think about that. That's really 2,000 passes. Well, actually, if it's like my Netflix account, which is in 17 cities, it's probably 5,000 people, you know, sharing that ID code they got. And that's crazy. That's 3-4 times more than we normally sold. You know, we were able to reach people out of town. We did a big push outside of New York, too. But a lot of people, by that time, by September, because that's when we started, we ran it September through December, had already gone through all the Netflix movies and Hulu and Amazon. And it just was a dream. The filmmakers, we did a lot. We did pre-recorded interviews with filmmakers. We did a live award ceremony, which was really cool. It was the next best thing to do in a festival. Believe me, I want to do it live, and I'm so glad we're doing it. We'll get to that, why we're doing it both ways this summer. But it worked so well, we did a spring series. We were doing all kinds of other things online, too. We did live programs. We did Seawolf showcases with all of our great students doing music, theater, and dance. We did kids programs. The Emerson played a concert in our hall. Our art gallery did virtual programs. And our art gallery is open all year round with our students, faculty, and staff coming. We were busier, I would say, this year than I think we are when we were open. Except I got my Saturday nights back. That was probably the only difference. And my friends got to see me on the weekends, which was kind of cool. But other than that, my team, I've got the best damn team, you know, you could count on. No one had to be asked. They just said, what are we going to do? And we made it happen. Our sponsors were thrilled. Island Federal was thrilled with it. They could have turned around and pulled their support. They could have said, you know what, it's not live this year. Brett Sears, the Island Federal's CEO and president, called me and said, listen, he's on my board. After our board meeting in June, when we were planning on doing this, he said, Alan, you tell me what you want. You want to put the money towards next year, you do that. You want to do it virtually, whatever you want, you got my support. Same thing with Campola, Middleton, and McCormick, and all of our other sponsors. So we had the support. We actually covered our costs, and people really enjoyed some great movies this year.
That's really amazing. That's really amazing. And what's really, really cool is you have the confidence, and the filmmakers have the confidence in the technology to be able to keep it as secure as possible.
A lot of distributors, right? You know, I work with distributors too. You know, most of the festival films are brand new independent films that are independent filmmakers. But of course, like other festivals, although we really try and get really earthy and independent films, not the ones that are going to be in the local theaters. A lot of our films end up in a lot of the art houses. Matter of fact, I think two of them or three. Asia is playing in New York City right now, which we premiered at the festival, and I think also. I think The Keeper, which is another German film that we premiered, is playing in New York right now. So we do go with distributors, but they're smaller boutique distributors. And these companies, look, they had their own, a lot of them created their own independent servers because they had to stay alive also. So a lot of them, like Magnolia and IFC and Distrib Films, they created their own. But